So this is actually a great offense. And then the same thing started in the Gaudiya Sampradaya. A few generations, when the Muslims invaded, then the many deities were moved to Jaipur, out of Vrindavan. And then in Jaipur, some of the Gaudiya Pujaris, who at that time were in renounced order, they got married with approval of the king. And then they started the same thing. Their sons became Pujari. And kept the name Goswami. Now, this is already a great mistake to use that title, Goswami. And then because they're householders, you know, then there's also further tendency of compromising and, you know, incorporating sense gratification into one's devotional service. So as Prabhupada said, then after 250 years, very quickly, the situation, as Prabhupada used this word, it became ridiculous. Then you have these, you know, I mean, out and out vichai, sense gratifier, going around calling themselves Goswami, and thus giving a very bad name. And yet they are the inheritors. We talked about this principle of material son. They are the inheritors of temples, of land in the Dham, of deities, and they continued on with the worship. So, of all the Upashampradayas, the Jati Gosai clearly are in the most consequential position, because all the other, the innocent folk, they want to come and see deity belonging to some great associate of Mahaprabhu. They come to the temple and they're met by these Jati Gosais who are doing the puja and then giving the prasad and taking the donation and preaching and misleading everyone. So, this in itself is bad enough, but then you get lines like the Nityananda Vamsa, who also claim to be Jati Gosai, but they're not. Because Lord Nityananda, he had one son and one daughter. Son was Virabhadra, daughter was Ganga Devi. And Virabhadra, although he was householder, he did not have any sons. He simply had three disciples. And then the descendants of these three disciples, they started calling themselves Nityananda Vamsa. They said, we're descendants of Lord Nityananda. They were saying that his three disciples were actually his sons. And because they're descended from the three disciples, and naturally they're coming in that line. So there's an example of a whole totally bogus line. I mean, there is no actually seminal connection at all with Nityananda. So Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, he smashed this group. Prabhupada mentions that in Nectar of Devotion. And there are other groups. Among the Baals and the others, Gauranga Nagari and so on, these other sects, it's very common someone just, suddenly he's a Goswami. He just puts that on his name. And he may have some bogus family tree going back to some great personality, and it's not true at all. So you have these two things. You have the original Jati Gosai, who are bad enough in themselves, but at least, I mean, Prabhupada said Krishna consciousness does not pass on by the blood. So there's no credit, spiritual credit, but at least the honesty is there, that there actually is a family connection. But then there's so many other pseudo-Jati Gosai, there's not even a family connection. But then the foolish people, as we mentioned, who are these foolish people? Those who are ignorant and those who are weak. And they're chanting the holy name but making offenses, and thus they're bewildered and they become misled by them. So, it's now 12:32. And the subject of smarta is very, very big. It's one of the things I wanted to deal with. Not because the smartas have any significance nowadays. There are no smarta. This sect has died out. Because there are no smarta Brahmins. Brahmin in Bengal means, you know, meat eater. Meat eater communist. Jyoti Basu or someone like that. There are no smarta Brahmins left. But the smarta tendency is very, very significant, very applicable to ISKCON. So I wanted to spend some time talking about the smarta mentality. Because these upper sampradayas, these are like archetypical forms of falling into maya, actually. So although you don't find now in Bengal this upper sampradaya smarta, we can see the smarta tendency sometimes in our own movement. So I wanted to give some time to that. So we can pause for questions until the end of the class, a few minutes. Hare Griva. What I want to do is, I want to do a seminar on this, because I don't think we're going to be able to cover this to the extent I would like to. Now we have actually only 2 hours left, and we're going to have to just rush through these. And there's some very significant points to be made. So I was thinking of arranging that I would do a seminar shortly before Gaur Purnima. If I could have 6 hours, then I could really do a good treatment of this. Thank you. But don't ask me to repeat. Okay. Any other question? Dr. Stewart?
What happens to the people that acknowledge the ignorance of those spiritually bewildered?
Yeah, they need Krishna's mercy. And Krishna's mercy comes in the form of the Vaishnavas. So, if they're innocent, then they may be saved by good association. But if they become corrupted by bad association, then it's very, very difficult. Yes, these problems that they are having will be solved by hearing from proper source. If they hear and apply their intelligence to understand the philosophy, this is called sambandha jnana. They become actually connected with the proper process, sambandha, by this knowledge coming from the lips of a pure devotee. Then they can get rescued. But if they become perverted by this bad association, they become poisoned, you know, and they're told that the good devotees are the bad devotees. You know, it's like reverse vision. You know, we're the real sampradaya, they're the upper sampradaya. So then it becomes very a sectarian outlook. And then they don't want to mix.
And you know, try and distinguish between the good devotee and the bad devotee. You might sort of take the full form.
Hmm?
It might take to fault finding if you're trying to distinguish between the good devotee and the bad devotee, and then actually then fall the other way.
Hmm.
Where's your mental judgment?
Who makes the judgment?
Judge between the good devotee, what's good to
and what? Well, this is what our seminar is about here, you know. We're trying to point out the symptoms of deviation. In ISKCON terms, Prabhupada said, it's very simple, when Prabhupada, in his last days, he gave 3 points. He said that bona fide disciple is he who catches up the mood of the spiritual master. And this mood, Prabhupada explained, in 3 ways. He said the mood, it means his mood, Prabhupada's mood in management, Prabhupada's mood in continuing the disciplic succession, in other words, taking on new disciples, and in translating or writing literatures, producing new literatures. So Prabhupada, he specifically pointed out these 3 things. His mood must be sustained in these 3 activities. Management, the expansion of Krishna consciousness by accepting new disciples, and in producing Krishna conscious literature. So one who is following Prabhupada's mood, especially in these 3 activities, he's a bona fide devotee. and someone who's going off the track, especially in those three areas, thinking up some new method of management, thinking up some new philosophy of disciplic succession, that for instance, Parampara ended with Prabhupada, or you know, some new kind of philosophy, some, you know, books about, we could mention some titles, but might be like considered a low blow, so we won't. But there are books with certain titles which would fit that description. any other? We have half a minute left. What now? Well, you know, Prabhupada said Mahaprabhu accepted Balavacharya as a great scholar, but not necessarily as a great devotee. And Chaitanya Charitamrita gives enough indication about Balavacharya, his attitudes. Mahaprabhu really was displeased when Balavacharya claimed that he had surpassed Sridhar Swami in his Bhagavatam commentary. Sridhar Swami is in the same sampradaya, the Vishnu Swami sampradaya. And Balavacharya is claiming to come down in that sampradaya, and he says, I've written a better commentary than... And then Mahaprabhu said, you're like a prostitute. One who does not accept the Swami, which can be doubly interpreted as Sridhar Swami or the husband, I consider a Vaishya. Vaishya means prostitute. And there are other things there in Chaitanya Charitamrita that indicate that, as Prabhupada said, not actually a great devotee, great scholar. A scholar who identifies with Vaishnava philosophy.
You mentioned about having, if you took up some lesson, maybe then,
you mentioned that. Well, I'm not sure if I can count on the source you quoted. So I don't like to comment on that. He did indeed receive initiation from Gadadhar Pandit. And then he went his own way anyway. But he had a friendly relationship. You see, Balavacharya himself was friendly with Mahaprabhu and the Goswamis of Vrindavan. That's a fact. But because there was something in his heart to, a bit strange, then the deviation of his line appeared very, very profoundly in later generations. So we got to end here. Hare Krishna. Same time, same place tomorrow. We shall continue. We are continuing. Just at the end of the class yesterday, I realized that there was a few points I wanted to make on that Jati Gosai, which pertain to ISKCON, because I think that perhaps the most interesting aspect of what we're discussing is to see how these perversions also even manifest in our own society. Huh? Well, that's their problem. I'm not going to stop for that. Oh, you got it under control, Jai. So with Jati Gosai, there are three things that I thought of. One, first one, which I think is very graphic, was in 1970s, 74, something like that. There was one sannyasi, who was GVC, in New York, and for expanding Krishna consciousness, with apostrophes, quotation marks around that phrase, he got married to one woman who he thought was the heiress of the Toyota family, some Oriental woman who later turned out to be nothing more than a prostitute, but that came out years later. Although by her activities, many devotees very soon started to suspect that how could she be Toyota heiress. But anyway, he was very much under illusion. So after that happened, that marriage, then he continued on in his service as GVC and in charge of New York Temple. And I was on traveling Sankirtan at that time. Not connected with New York Temple, but it so happened that I stopped in New York for a visit. And I'll never forget, I walked up to the temple entrance and one devotee met me at the temple. He was kind of like standing in the door. And he wanted to set me wise on one point. He said, "Prabhu, even though blank, won't mention the name, has gotten married, you must understand that around here we still refer to him as Goswami." And he made that very, like, it was like piercing glance, like, if you're going to talk about him here, you better also call him Goswami. And I thought that was a little remarkable, because at that time, the first volumes of Chaitanya Charitamrita, Adi Lila, had started to come out, and I remember very clearly, there's one purport where Srila Prabhupada says, in the Krishna consciousness movement, those in household or life are never referred to as Goswami. And so Prabhupada was referring to this Jati Gosai group who take this name. And so that is actually a very clear graphic instance of the appearance of this contamination in our society. More generally, one can also say that there is always that tendency. I mean, I don't want to sound like I'm generalizing too much, but there is a tendency that comes out of the householder ashram among certain members for, as we've already discussed, turning Krishna consciousness into a kind of business, a kind of profession, which is just what the Jati Gosai do with the temples. And in this way, these householders, they may fall down to a very low standard of actual Krishna consciousness, sadhana bhakti. But because of some apparent success, anitya vaibhav, some success in making money or having influence or whatever, then for that reason, for monetary or economic reasons, they may go on as being accepted as, you know, leaders in the community of devotees, important personalities like that. And it even comes to the point, this was the third point I wanted to make, where such fellows who are quite obviously fallen in their own spiritual life, they nonetheless think that they are competent to criticize others, even those in the sannyas ashram. So they sometimes launch in very scathing criticisms of sannyasis. Now what that means is that they think that they're as good, or if they can criticize, then they think they're even better. So that is, without giving the name Gosai or Goswami, they're actually putting themselves in that category, that I am as good or better than any of these swamis. So that is actually the conclusion. So in these ways we see this tendency has manifested in our own movement at different times, different places. So now, leaving that subject, anitya vaibhav or karma contamination, then we come to smarta. Now, as I said yesterday, one doesn't actually see in Bengal, although around India there are smarta Brahmins, especially in South India, but in Bengal we don't see this particular kind of upasampradaya. You all agree with that? Smartas? We don't see. Smarta means, it comes from the word smriti, which refers to the scriptures containing the rules and regulations, Dharma Shastra. So a smarta Brahmin, in general terms, is one who's very much attached to following rules and regulations. Niyama graha. Niyama means rules and regulations. Graha means to grasp. Then the opposite is niyama agraha, let go. Sometimes forgetting following, the smartas have done that also. But generally they're known to be very attached to rules and regulations, very attached to their position in society, to their so-called pure Brahminical standard. So in Bengal, as everywhere else in India, during the time of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, there was a great community of smarta Brahmins. And when Vaishnavism spread, then many of them took up, seemed to take up Gaudiya Vaishnavism. So there are many stories about that, especially connected with the pastimes of Srila Narottam Das Thakur. We don't have time to get into that. But we just want to talk about basically the how the smarta mentality manifests in the community of Vaishnavas, taking that as the reference. And we can see that it is still, although you don't find a smarta upper sampradaya nowadays in Bengal, still the tendency is something that is very much relevant today. It can be seen. So I want to just go over these notes on it and pick out, since we have so much less time, try to pick out the essential features. We already mentioned in explaining weeks ago about the Vedic scriptures that there are two concepts of dharma. Artika, which means need-based, or materialistic, artika dharma. So that is also comes under the Vedic umbrella. And there are scriptures which are specifically need-based. They're actually dealing with the regulation of the tendency to eat, sleep, mate, defend like that. But then there are paramartika dharma shastras, which are based on the supreme need. This word prayojan, isn't it? It also means need?
Necessity,
yes. So prayojan, prayojan as you've known, refers to Krishna prema, developing love of Krishna, prema bhakti. So among Vedic scriptures, there are those which deal with that. And the Krishna consciousness movement is specifically based on those, the Vaishnava Shastras. Now, those who are smartas, smarta Brahmins, they're more concerned with these Artika Dharma Shastras. And so when they take on the appearance of being Vaishnava, then one sees the contradiction. It manifests in their lifestyle and philosophy, the contradiction between Paramartika Dharma and Artika Dharma. So I have a whole list of similarities, apparent similarities between the Vaishnavas and the Smartas. So I'll go down this list, 20 items. Both accept Varnashram Dharma. Both are apparent worshippers of Lord Vishnu. Both treat demigods with respect. Both celebrate occasions like Ekadasi, Janmastami, Ramnavami. Both take bath in and worship the sacred Ganga. Both have ashrams, and they, in these ashrams and temples, they install and worship the Archa Vigraha. Both chant Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. Both accept Krishna Prasadam and take remnants in the form of garlands, charnamrita, so on. Both accept spiritual master. Both accept initiation and mantra. Both worship Shalagram Shila. Both worship Tulsi. Both will wear tilak and tulasi, kantimal. Both read and quote Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, both go on pilgrimage to holy places like Sri Vrindavan Dham, Mayapur Dham. Both take Gayatri initiation and chant according to Sandhya 3 times a day. Both perform Shraddha ceremony in that's the funeral ceremony and offering to forefathers. Both follow Chaturmas, both accept samskaras, both accept gotra, family name. So all these similarities are there, but there is a great difference in the intention. So we want to go over this briefly. When it is said both Vaishnavas and Smartas accept Varnashram Dharma, it is seen that the Vaishnavas accept it for the satisfaction of Lord Vishnu. Shastra says, Vishnu Purana says, that Lord Vishnu is pleased by humanity following the Varnashram system of organization, which he himself has given. So for that reason, Vaishnavas will follow Varnashram. However, and that is actually called Daivi Varnashram. Sometimes there's a question, what does it mean, Varnashram, Daivi Varnashram? Daivi Varnashram means following Varnashram for the satisfaction of Krishna. And by doing that, one actually transcends Varnashram. Then one, just like we said yesterday, Kiva Vipra, Kiva Nyashi, Shudra Kena Noi. One comes to the transcendental platform with these external designations. They don't in any way impinge on one's Krishna consciousness. It has no relevance as far as Krishna consciousness is concerned. But the smartas, on the other side, they follow Varnashram absorbed in bodily consciousness. So, in other words, they are very much concerned with what family one was born in and the hereditary rights of that family, and also repressing true tendencies, just like it is said, Kalo Shudra Sambhava. So people are born Shudra in this age. So someone may, in a Brahmin family, may have children, they're all Shudras. But he tries to simply pass them off as Brahmins, although they're not trained. Their natural tendency is to be Shudra. They can be trained, but because they're absorbed in this gross bodily consciousness, training is not possible. So therefore, Srila Prabhupada said, talking in the Western terms, he said, PhD can be interpreted as plow department. Such big intellectuals, they may have some title like PhD, or carrying it over to Indian society, Brahmin. But when one studies the symptoms, one sees they're fit for tilling the field only. So Prabhupada said that they should do. If that's their natural tendency, then that's better they do that than sport some artificial title. Of course, the best thing is to become properly trained in Daivi Varnashram. Both Smartas and Vaishnavas may worship Vishnu, but again, the true Vaishnava worships Vishnu for his satisfaction alone. And he understands Krishna Tattva, he understands Lord Vishnu, Lord Krishna's actual position as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But the Smartas, their understanding is that Vishnu is like a demigod, and he's there to fulfill fruitive desires. So the Vaishnavas don't disrespect the demigods, but they also understand them to be angsas of Lord Vishnu, whereas the Smartas, they think they're independent. Vaishnavas celebrate Ekadasi, to, as Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, it is the mother of devotion, to enhance their devotion to Krishna, to please Krishna. Smartas, on the other side, celebrate Ekadasi for physical or mental welfare, or as activities that fulfill moral, economic, or sexual desires. The Vaishnavas view the Ganga as nectar emanating from Lord Vishnu's lotus feet. And when they see the Ganga, they're reminded of Krishna. Whereas the smartest take bath in the Ganga. Maybe someone can guess why they do that.
Wash their clothes.
Wash their clothes. Yeah, that also. But there's something else they can wash off too.
Their
Yes, wash off their sins. That's why the smartest like the Ganga. So the Vaishnavas, they install and worship the deity form of the Lord as a part of the Sankirtan movement. In other words, the Vaishnavas understand that the Yuga Dharma is Sankirtan, and deity worship is actually a part of that, and they also understand the deity to be non-different from the Lord. Whereas the Smartas, they install the deity for business. It's a good way to make some money and become priest of a temple. And of course, Smartas have no real connection with the Sankirtan movement. So the same thing can be said about ashrams also, establishing ashrams. Vaishnavas do it to propagate Sankirtan movement, Smartas do it for sense gratification. So, let me try to go through this list a little quickly now. The Vaishnavas chant the holy name, understanding the name to be non-different from Krishna, understanding it to be the Yuga Dharma. They receive the holy name from the bona fide spiritual master. And when they chant, they avoid offenses. Whereas the Smartas take the holy name, as it is said, that offense, as auspicious karmakanda type activity. It is useful for fulfilling some material purpose. But they don't receive the holy name from proper source. They don't understand the holy name's identity with Lord Krishna. The Vaishnavas accept Mahaprasadam, Charanamrita, and so on in the spirit of devotional service. In this way, they're receiving Krishna's mercy. The Smartas take prasad as something to be enjoyed, sense gratification. The Vaishnavas accept a pure devotee as the spiritual master, regardless of his caste. Whereas the Smartas are very much concerned that their spiritual master come from the highest class possible, highest class of Brahmins. And whether or not he has any spiritual qualification, it is good for family tradition if one takes guru from very high class Brahmin. And Vaishnavas accept initiation from the spiritual master to become established in devotional service. And the Smartas, they take initiation because it's good for their social standing. And such persons who have that kind of attitude to take initiation like that, then he disrespects the spiritual master. He treats the spiritual master like a barber or a laundryman. You see, someone who's coming to do some service for him. And thus, because of that attitude, he has this attitude to the spiritual master. Then no real spiritual master is going to initiate such a person. But there's all kinds of bogus. Prabhupada said cheaters and cheated. So there's a whole range of bogus gurus who will initiate such persons. The smartest, it says here, the smartest have a materialistic conception about Tulasi. They take it as a plant that has great medicinal value. I suppose that also means in the sense of also getting rid of sins.
That's used in Ayurveda.
Yes, also. But that's the extent of their appreciation of Tulasi Devi.
It sounds like some of these items are things that people think about these days. I mean, smart that these items are probably real.
Yeah, this is what I mean to say, that the specific sect called Smarta Brahman may not be seen. It was once a specific sect, but the Brahmanism in Bengal has all but disappeared. You don't find Brahmins who follow strict rules and regulations anymore. But this mentality, which can appear in the mind of someone who's accepted by everyone as a Vaishnava, he's initiated into the Vaishnava movement, and these tendencies can appear in his mind. So anyway, there are other points. I think it's going to take too long to go. I think those were the main ones. By now you've gotten the idea that on these 20 points of similarity, the smartest differ in the mood. They have a completely materialistic approach to these activities. So that means, in all of these, in accepting spiritual master and chanting the holy name and worshipping the deity and any of these 20 items, they're simply making offenses. So this is smarta. Now, as we said, Jati Gosai Smarta, they fall under Anitya Vaibhava. That means their main interest is to attain worldly success. Both groups are seen to be very much concerned with their position in society, with their comforts, with their name, with their fame, and so on. So they hold themselves together in a way that they can pass themselves off as Vaishnavas. In other words, they're not going to let the Maya go too far so that it makes them look degraded or makes them look like they've adopted some other philosophy. But expanding out of that karmic desire, the subtle desire for sense gratification in the name of Krishna consciousness, we find these two other, Anyabhilashita, base material desire in the form of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati says, Kamanira Kama, the desire to enjoy women. And on the other side, Mayavada Gyan. So, under both, I've stretched it across, is this Prakriti Sahajya. In Prakriti Sahajya, you find both there. The lust and the speculative philosophy. And then the other upasampradayas you see listed below, actually what they are is they're simply all varieties of sahajya, but taking specific forms that can be distinguished from one another. But Prakriti Sahajya, I've been researching this and it is simply vast. I've come to the conclusion that Prakriti Sahajya simply, it means the material mentality itself. It's just like Maya is unlimited. And when you look, study this Prakriti Sahajya, it's just simply unlimited in permutation and in depth. It's a very, very, very deep thing. It goes right down to the very basic reasons why the spirit soul is here in the material world and why he's going to stay in the material world also, no matter what. No matter what the Vaishnavacharyas try, there is a certain class that just want to stay here. So to avoid surrendering to Krishna, they've taken Prakriti Sahajya, philosophy. So, prakriti, prakriti means prakriti, material nature. And sahajya, so this word sahajya, what is that? Saha jayate iti sahaja. It means that that which is, that quality which is born with one, those tendencies that one is born with, that is called sahaja, the nature one is born with. Now, there are two views on this. Because we find this word sahaja in Bhagavad Gita. In Bhagavad Gita, chapter 18, text 48, sahajam karma kaunteya sadosham apinatya jet. One should not give up the work born of his nature, O son of Kunti, even if such work is full of fault. So Krishna is saying one should do what is natural to oneself. One should in that way follow one's nature. But what Krishna means is that the nature should be, we use this, Prabhupada gave us this word, dovetailed. The nature should be dovetailed with this paramartika dharma. This sahaja actually refers to the artika, the physical needs of the body. So Krishna in 18th chapter is recommending that this aspect be dovetailed with the transcendental need of the living entity. To become Krishna conscious, go back home, back to Godhead. So this word sahaja is used by the Vaishnavas. It is found in Sri Krishna Karnamrita, it is found in Chaitanya Chandradaya, it is found in Chaitanya Charitamrita. I have a whole list of verse references here, which we don't have to go through now. So it is used, but it is important to understand what the Vaishnavas mean. Ultimately, when Vaishnavas say nature, the nature of the living entity, the ultimate, the overriding meaning is the spiritual nature. Huh? Just like Bhaktivinoda Thakur, we read in the Shikshashtakam purports, the Svadharma, the actual Svadharma of the living entity is to chant the holy name of the Lord. Now the same term Svadharma can be variously interpreted also in Varnashram sense. Someone's Svadharma is Brahminical or Kshatriya or whatever. But the ultimate meaning is the nature of the soul. So the Vaishnava places the material needs under that. We have to maintain the body to serve Krishna, but the most important thing is serving Krishna. So serving Krishna cannot be sacrificed for maintaining the body. Now the sahajya is in a very, very devious, it's amazingly devious way. They have reversed everything. They have taken Krishna conscious philosophy and totally materialized it by very clever means. So we can just go over some of the points. The first outstanding thing to talk about is their view of the appearance of the Lord, Lord Krishna, Lord Chaitanya. They have the same view as the Mayavadis, that when the Lord appears, he actually appears in a material body. So in that sense, there's no difference between us and him. So that means there's no difference, this is a very important point, there's no difference between our desires and his desires.